Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Living Your Life by Design, a conversation of self, health, and wealth with the sole purpose of advancing and enhancing the lives of women. And now, your host, certified career consultant, life coach, and author, Kathy Holloway Hill.
Hello, I'm Kathy Holloway Hill.
And I'm Tony Lamont.
And you're listening to the best of Living by Design. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving, and we will join you live next week, December 3rd, for a very powerful show entitled Let It Out and Let It Go. And now, enjoy the best of Living by Design.
And we have an exciting show and a very special guest with us, Ms. Kimberla Lawson Roby. Hello, Kimberla, are you there?
Yes, I am. How are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you this evening?
I'm fine, and very glad to be on with both of you. I'm listening. I'm like, wow, who are they talking about? Is that me? Yes. How kind of you. And oh, my God, when I have those moments when I wonder if it's good enough, and I have a few of those, especially over the last couple of years, is it worth me, you know, continuing this? Is anybody getting anything from it? And boy, it's comments like both of yours that really helped me to continue on. So I really appreciate hearing everything that you had to say. Yeah, and that's always the, I think, which is a huge blessing, you know, in what I have been able to write, because I don't even know so much that I plan to always write about real life issues in a fictional format, but when I had written the very first book, Behind Closed Doors, and I started hearing from readers, you know, once the book was out, and I was hearing from people by email as well as from people when I was on the road doing different events, and what I kept hearing was that they could relate to the storyline, or they had gone through what one of the characters had gone through, or the other main character, or they knew family members or friends who had. And so that was really what prompted me to say, this is what I'm always going to try to do with every single book. And so now it's just pretty much always been to the point where I decide what subject or issue is important, and then I build the characters around it. So everything comes second, you know, in terms of what that topic is going to be, and that seems to really have resonated with so many different people. I think with the Reverend Curtis Black stories, you know, that ended up being 5 books in the series. I never planned for it to be more than 1 book. And so my worry was always, you know, first of all, am I going to repeat myself? Am I going to be in a position where readers will read the second one and say, this isn't any better or any different than the first one? But readers kept asking for more of the Reverend Curtis Black, and they wanted to read more about the problems and the scandals that were going on in churches. And so they were telling me about the individual things that were going on in the churches in their cities. And so that's what, you know, allowed me, I guess, to finally agree to this idea of doing a second one, and it just turned into a third and a fourth and a fifth. For me, I'd probably be, you know, more apt to just write a totally different book with all new characters every single time.
I want to ask, I understand that you have a degree in marketing or business?
It is business administration, and I emphasize marketing and finance. Then I started thinking, well, I'm just going to start my own business. Didn't know what that was, but just knew that I didn't want to continue working for someone else. And so then I started thinking back to elementary school teachers. I went back that far in my mind and remembered how my sixth grade teacher had always said, you should be a writer, you should be a writer. He had spent that entire year basically telling me that. Same thing in junior high school, and my journalism teacher would do the same thing for 2 years, and then in high school, and then even in college. And so then I thought, well, maybe I should give this a try. This is what my teachers and even my professors in college were encouraging me to do, and so I just started coming home every evening. When I finally made that decision, I came home every evening and wrote every weekend, and I did that for 7 months until the first book was complete, and one thing just sort of led to another after that.
You're listening to the best of Living by Design.
Coming up on the Living by Design show, a special tribute to you, our loyal listener, an evening, an intimate evening, with R&B legend, Mr. Howard Hewitt.
It was a slow song, the lights were so low.
to say goodbye for now. We'll have our second time around. But before we go, there's something I'd like to say.
Howard Ewer, coming to Living by Design.
Hello, hello, hello. This is Kathy Holloway Hill, and Mr. Tony Lamont is on the line. Tony, are you there?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yeah, how are you doing this evening?
Doing great this evening.
That's wonderful. This is going to be such an exciting show tonight. I am so pumped and ready. And I know my listeners are pumped and ready, too. We have Mr. Howard Hewitt. Oh, this is going to be so exciting. I know everyone is so anxious to get to Howard this evening. I'm really, really excited about this, and I just want to give you all a little bit of taste of what you're going to be talking to and who you're going to be talking to this evening.
It's got to be real. Girl, I could write a book on how you make me feel. Yeah. I know I'll never find, baby, another who could match the love you're giving to me.
Celebrities in my day, but Howard has to be one of the most down-to-earth, kind-hearted people I know. He's on the line here, and I'm going to bring him on. Mr. Hewitt, are you there?
You have me blushing over here, Kathy.
Oh, well, you deserve to be blushing.
That got me blushing. I'm like, okay, all right, well, that's good. That's beautiful. I'm glad that's how you feel. I just try and be... You know what? I try and treat people the way I would want to be treated.
Area code 209. Can you hear us? Area code 209?
Yes, I can. This is Linda calling from California. How are you?
Hi, Linda. How are you?
I'm doing great. Howard, just love your music. I was sitting here listening to the show, and I said I wasn't going to call in, and then I heard Wendy, and I was like, wait a minute, he got to know there was somebody in California growing up listening to him. I was like, that was my man, so I just have to call in. No, you can't claim my man, not on the internet, no. But I just wanted to call in just real quick to say I appreciate your music. I appreciate everything that you've done, especially your Journey project. That was wonderful. And just want you to know I still love you, and if you get divorced, you can look me up.
I look you up. Well, thank you
that's
very
funny.
Much.
Amen, amen. And I do have one question, if you can. Can you just sing something for us a little bit? I just want to hear your voice over the line, live and in person.
So what do you want to hear?
I'm sitting here and I'm trying to think what I want to hear. I mean, you can just sing happy birthday. My birthday about to come up, so you can just say happy birthday to me.
Oh, your birthday?
And I'll be happy birthday.
Okay, your name again is what? Your name again?
Linda.
Linda. Okay.
Yes.
All right. So your birthday's coming. So we say, happy birthday to you, baby. happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Linda. Happy birthday to you.
Thank you. Linda, are you okay?
I'm wonderful. Anyway, I'm ready. I can go on with life now. Thank you so much. I appreciate you so much.
Okay.
Oh, thank you for calling in, Linda.
Amen.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to The Best of Living by Design.
She came into the world as a ward of the state. Today, she is an accomplished star of film and television. She delivers a touching tribute to the amazing women who raised her and to the foster care system that made it possible. I was never meant to be raised by one mother, but by many. Victoria Rowell.
I spent 18 years in foster care, and all of my mentors were so important to me.
What the critics are saying about the women who raised me. Rowell salutes her female mentors.
Someone took the time to teach me, and that person to me was champion. That person didn't laugh or express shock. They simply said, come here, honey, let me show you. And it's those mentors that make a difference in a person's life, whether in foster care or other.
The memoir, An Account of Rowell's Childhood in the Foster Care System and Beyond, is a testament to the women who guided her from birth. Miami Herald. The Women Who Raised Me, a memoir by Victoria Rowell, now available in paperback from the Amistad Division on HarperCollins. Pick up a copy from your local bookstore or order from Amazon.com.
Victoria, are you there?
Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
I am wonderful. How are you doing?
Well, I got an opportunity to listen to your wonderful testimony about how we all have to take a leap of faith in this world and
yes.
do all of our incarnation. Well, thank you for asking the question, first of all. I believe because the women are emblematic of women from all over the world, because God knows they are, one woman is, her parents are Mexican and South American. Another woman lived in China. First language is French. Another, you get the picture.
Mm-hmm.
Another woman is from the Carolinas. Another woman is from Jamaica. And so the women, I've written about over 25 women who came into my life. And it's important that we understand that you don't have to be a creed, a color. You just have to have a heart and a soul and a willingness to take care of a child any way you can. And that's why it was important for me to tell the stories, not only my story, but I tell the histories of each of these women and what happened in their own childhoods, what happened in their own lives that catapulted them into this need and want to care for other people. And I think we're all hardwired, really, to care. But a lot of us have become desensitized by access to 24/7 internet news, just stories upon stories, and we've in a way lost touch with our own humanity.
I agree.
So what I wanted to do was sit down. And so while I was on The Young and the Restless, I would stay long after my scenes were done. And I would write and write and write and write and write. And I started writing back in the 90s on this book. But I wanted to write these stories of these women from Maine to California who had migrated here or who were already here several generations and wanted to write about who they were as people first. And that's really it. And beyond that, of course, I wanted to thank these people that touched me, but everyone has these people in their life to a degree.
Mm-hmm.
We just have to recognize them.
You're listening to The Best of Living by Design.
I'm going
to
go ahead and bring Simon T. Bailey on the line. Simon, are you there? I am. How are you?
I'm excellent. How are you, dear?
I'm doing awesome. Outstanding. Couple of things to think about. When people go from fail relationship to fail relationship, there is something that they must examine within themselves to say, why am I attracting dysfunction into my life? What is at the root of my life that continues to bring these types of relationships along my path that lead me down or lead me into a negative zone? So there's really something that people have to examine within themselves, because here's the deal. Whatever you don't deal with will eventually deal with you, okay? And until you begin to put your truth on the table, face the music, and really deal with your unfinished business, you will continue to vibrate into the universe those that come to you to keep you bound. But when you make a decision and put your foot down and say enough is enough, and not just in words, but really making a heart, here's what happens. When you make a decision that you're going to shift from the negative zone, you will experience an internal alignment where your head, your heart, and your hands will be in lockstep with the decision that you have made. Thus, your feet will follow. But what happens many times is there is a disconnection, and it's what Rabbi Harold Kushner calls emotional incongruence, where there is a split in your soul. And when there is a split in your soul, what happens, what you vibrate out into the universe, are those things that are negative in nature, and thus there is a disconnect between your head, your heart, and your hands. Your head wants to go one way, but your heart still has the residue left over from the previous relationship, and all of a sudden a person shows up, and then your hands and your feet go in a direction you didn't want to go because there was no internal congruency. So it's really dealing with the unfinished business, putting truth on the table, and really making a decision to get to the root of what the issue is. When you begin to come to a place of clarity, all of a sudden, the universe begins to bend in your direction and begins to divinely arrange appointments for you. So when you show up, it becomes a moment of serendipity, a happy accident. You bump into something because you stop trying to make something happen and you let it go and begin to act as if it's so. And when you begin to act as if it's so, you begin to vibrate into the universe. Who are the individuals that you need to connect with? And literally, I might go left coast on you just for a moment, but it's almost like a radio frequency. When you begin to tune into your inherent purpose, you begin to tune into people that are supposed to connect to your destiny. And you begin to tune out people who no longer support where you're going. Because there are people that come in your life and people that come through your life. And you have to recognize who are the people that have come in. Why have they shown up at this season? It's because they've tuned into your frequency. And they are supposed to provide the answer or ask you a question that moves you down the path towards your greater purpose. So when an airplane is on the runway and is about to take off, there are four laws that are at work, which you and Tony know: the law of lift, the law of drag, the law of gravity, and certainly the law of push. What happens is once you become airborne in your purpose, there are some people who can no longer survive at a higher altitude. So because they have not been built for the rare air that you are about to soar into, they begin to drop out of your life because they cannot handle where you're going. And sometimes it's not something that you have said. It's the nonverbal cues of what they sense in you, because there's been a shift that's happened from the inside out. And when that shift happens from the inside out, they realize that the conversation that used to take place on one level, the conversation has shifted to another level, and they are not equipped to go there because they are not as hungry as you. Thus, they will begin to kind of step aside, and really they should be stepping up because you want to reach out and help them go to where you're going so that they can realize their destiny, their dreams, their purpose, but that really is a decision that they have to make. It's just because you've moved to a higher altitude and you didn't allow the law of drag or the force of drag to keep you bound. Kathy, let me just say this. Where you're going in the next 18 months, sometimes you have to walk alone to come into your greater purpose. Your purpose is like the chapters in a book. The deeper you get into the book, the more richer the chapters are. I would invite you to consider affirming to yourself that you are coming into a new season of relationships that are equipped to support you and not be threatened by you so that you can become your big self. And all of the residue that has been deposited into you from the time you were 6 years of age, I believe within the next 18 months, the residue is going to begin to fall off so that you can begin to move into your greater purpose because you haven't even scratched the surface. This is just the tip of the iceberg. There are more books in you. There is a television show in you. There's a greater purpose and a greater destiny in you, but you have played small and have played down to the people that no longer serve your greater purpose. So you have to come to a place that you are ready to be big and that you are ready for the bigger chapters to unfold so that the microphone that has been deep in the belly of your soul, it can become a megaphone and you can begin to broadcast and begin to touch countless millions of women who are waiting for you to show up. But they can't show up until you show up and you let go of those who try to keep your feet planted on the ground when you were called to soar.
We have a very good topic this evening, and I got a lot of email notes and a lot of attention and a lot of comments about this topic, which is healing from incest and childhood sexual abuse. It's a very important topic because children are so fragile and impressionable, and their poor little lives can be traumatized and affected in the blink of an eye.
Our nation is in a state of emergency. Every 40 seconds, a child is reported missing in the United States. And of these missing children, 33% are African American children who are being torn from their families. It is critical that the African American community in our country become more involved in the safety of these precious children. There are astronomical numbers of abused, missing, and murdered African American children that fail to get the needed exposure in the media. Hi, I'm Blue Raspberry Wen, asking you to help save our children. For more information on how to help, go to www.savingourchildren.bravehost.com or www.myspace.com/HFMBC.
So I'm going to go ahead and bring our guest on the line for the evening. Dr. Jane, are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
I can. Thank you for joining us this evening. I am so excited about this topic we're going to talk about. It's a very important one.
It is. I'm delighted to be here. I mean, it's a difficult topic to talk about, it, and that's why people don't talk about it very often. But
right.
It's near to my heart because I've lived through it. I've lived through incest, and I've lived through recovery, and that's what I'd like to talk about tonight. Well, Tony, you may know, it at least at the beginning, it can be very difficult to believe oneself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a memory starts to come, and you think, oh, I must be crazy. My family would never have done that. So I think starting to believe oneself is important, but how? Expert help is just vital. You know, if you can possibly afford and find a therapist and one who is experienced with sexual abuse, because not all therapists are, although they should be, but to get somebody's
hand to hold. One of the most important questions that I got a lot of emails about was the fact that if a child is being abused, how can parents prepare themselves or equip themselves with the knowledge to know what to look for, to know that their child is being abused, whether it's in school or whether it's a family member or whatever the case may be. And, of course, a child is too afraid to come forward and say anything. So how can a parent protect their child and be aware of some of the signs? What are some of the signs?
Well, some of the signs are changes in behavior or a child getting sad and depressed and you don't know why. They say they don't want to visit a certain relative or they seem particularly unhappy at somebody's house. I mean, one of the things that's so difficult about this, Kathy, as you know, is that so often it's a family member who's doing the abusing. So you're looking out for behavior, but if the family member is right in the home, the child is exposed all the time. Having those crucial talks with the child to tell them that they don't need to be touched if they don't want to be touched and that their own private parts are their private parts. But as you said, the child is often so hesitant to say anything, and they don't have words for the things that have probably happened to them. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't have words for these things. They shouldn't have to have words for them. So if a child just even begins to disclose a hint, it's so important to believe them and affirm them and support their feelings. And just be very, very patient and don't expect the child to be able to tell you the story right away. Just affirm them and love them and hug them, and gradually it may come out. It's important to know what a high proportion of girls and boys, too, do get abused. It's the best estimates are about 1 in 3. 1 in 3 or 1 in 4. Isn't that awful?
That is amazing to me.
Get abused before age 18. And for boys, it's something like 1 in 5 or 1 in 6. So
wow.
It's not as common, but it's unfortunately common, too common, and devastating.
I'm going to go to the lines here and try to take a call because, like I said, I got so many email notes and comments about this topic, and I want to make sure everyone gets their questions answered. Area code 719, you're on the line. Do you have a comment?
Yeah, this is Bishop Edgar Young, Jr.
Hello, Bishop Edgar. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing fine. And yourself?
Doing great. Thank you very much for calling in. Do you have a comment or a question?
A couple things. These statistics in which, you know, one out of five and I forgot what she just said, out of four or three out of four, whatever, concerning the girls, but all of these are just maybe possibly known reported incidences. There's so many that never get reported, and for the simple fact is just like was previously said, that the perpetrators are normally someone close to the child, somebody in the family, and I mean, but you know, it's just a bad thing that's happening in our society that's finally coming to the forefront. There's nothing new under the sun. It's sad. Excuse me.
I was going to say, Bishop, if I can interject too, and you're absolutely right. I think one of the challenges within the community is we have to work as a community. I remember stories, and many of us that are a part of this have heard those stories, and you reflected back to the 50s and 60s and even 70s and even today. Stay away from that uncle, you know, don't let the kids around that uncle, or don't let the kids around that aunt or that cousin.
Right.
And they knew that there was something going on, but it was a family secret. And it's really time for that secret to stop and those activities to stop. Really.
Right.
Bishop, thank you very much for your call. Appreciate your call.
I'm going to bring Mr. J.L. King on the line. And Mr. King, are you there?
Yes, I am, Kathy. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing this evening?
Oh, I'm so blessed, and I thank you so much for allowing me to be your guest this evening on your show. I'm a big fan of yours. And so I wanted to come back and write my second book coming up in the download to let people know that I have accepted my own issues. I have accepted who I am, and I didn't care what nobody thought. I'm going to live my life, and I feel good about who I am. And that until we stop doing gay bash jokes, until we stop not accepting our gay and lesbian family members, because they're not going anywhere, and that this issue and this behavior has been around since the beginning of time, and until we get a grip and stop being so hateful and so afraid of it, that we will always have men and women who live on the down low.
You're listening to the best of Living by Design.
Kathy Holloway Hill.
And I'm Tony Lamont.
This is such a historic day. This is such a historic day. I am so excited to be a part of history. This is absolutely amazing.
You're absolutely right. It's an amazing day.
Yeah, this is a day that I didn't know if I would ever see in my lifetime, but we're here, and I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, I've actually gone through the same kind of thing. I mean, there's so many ways of looking at what has happened, getting the notification last night when it came across that Barack Obama was now the president-elect. And,
wow.
This country is changed forever. It's already being looked at differently by other countries.
Before we move any further, I want to offer my sincere condolences to the Obama family and Barack for the loss of his grandmother a few days ago. I can't even imagine, Tony, I can't even imagine all the bittersweet emotions he's been going through, you know, with sadness and happiness and a flurry of emotions. I mean, from one extreme to the other. Oh, my goodness. Bless his heart.
Well, you know, one thing you have to, it's amazing how God works, because he was able to get back home. Or he was able to get back home, because he was in Hawaii originally. He was able to get back there, and he was able to see his grandmother. But this is how the Lord works. His grandmother actually had filled out an absentee ballot. And that absentee ballot went ahead and cast her vote for her grandson, even though she had passed away.
I have a caller on the line, and I'm going to go ahead and bring this caller on, because I talked to this caller earlier, and I think he's got something very interesting to tell us about the Mr. President-elect. So I'm going to bring on area code 312. You're on the line.
Good evening, Kathy. Good evening, Tony. This is Father Tim Dodd of Hyde Park.
Hi there. How are you?
I'm tremendous. This is a glorious day, a day that's been a long time in coming, a day that honestly is long overdue. And I'm grateful and proud to have one of my neighbors, Senator Barack Obama, as the 44th President of the United States. You know, the gift that Barack brings is he is a very genuine and real human being. And he has time for everyone. It's a gift. It's a tremendous gift. And we're very lucky to have this person as our next president. The people
That's
spoke.
Amazing. So how long have you lived? You said in the neighborhood or?
In the neighborhood. He actually lives maybe 3/4 of a mile from me now. He used to live 4 houses down.
That's amazing.
But he moved up. He moved up into a wonderful big house.
Yes, he did. Wow.
And it's a thrill to have him in the neighborhood. You know, I have meetings all over Hyde Park because I work in ecumenical circles. And I have to pass through that security zone often. And to be able to get within 3 blocks, you have to be on the list and you have to go through multiple checkpoints. And yet, Secret Service has been very kind to the citizens of Hyde Park and of Chicago. They've been very easy to work with.
Wow. That's amazing. I mean, this is a time in our country, I was just saying to Tony, that I didn't think I would ever see, Father Tim. I didn't think I would ever see this time.
No, I knew it was coming. It's long overdue. You know, it's about qualifications. It's about desire. Here is a person who had a dream, who faced unbelievable odds. Convention said no, and he said, so what? The gift Barack brought was reaching out to the disenfranchised, to the people that have never voted, young, old, across all income lines, gender lines, race lines, location lines. And he said, I have a plan for change that makes sense. And the people agreed. They spoke their voice, their united voice. It's about unity in each of our communities because we are one people under one creator. There are many different names, many different paths, but the essence is to be true to yourself in honor of the divinity that you're a part of.
That's absolutely correct. And you know what? With that, I am going to just take a quick little break here, Tim. Don't you go away. You just hold on the line. And I just want to give everyone a little bit of history and a little bit of background on where it all started.
That one day, this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal. I have a dream that one day, down in Alabama with its vicious racists, with its governor having his lips dripping with the words of interposition and nullification, one day right there,
event, it is a perfect way to move forward, and that's what we all desire and need to do.
And I tell you, what really, really rang really strong for me is, you know, when I had an opportunity to speak with Michelle, and I just want to play that clip real quick here because change has always been the push and the belief, and that's what everybody has been holding on to, and I just really feel like that is a that's going to be very, very, very critical as far as us coming together and as a country. So I'm just going to just bear with me. I'm just going to play this little clip for everybody that's listening because this is really important.
Hi, I'm Kathy, and I'd like to know, Michelle, from your perspective as the wife of a presidential candidate, what do you see as your biggest challenge and obstacle to overcome and or deal with?
You know, I think that fear and the fear of change is sort of the big thing that keeps us from moving forward as a nation. I think that part of what we have to realize in this country is that there is more that unites us. I mean, we've had the opportunity to travel all around this country, to go into communities of all races, of all ethnicities, and people are open and they're kind, and we share the same values in this country, and folks are all striving for the same thing. It's just that our politics doesn't reflect the reality that we're closer to one another than not, because some people can politically profit off of the division. But I think that the challenge for us as a nation is that we have to put aside those old wounds, we have to set aside those old assumptions, and know that in our hearts that this country can change. But we have to do it step by step, that we have to be ready to change as individuals first. But I see that happening over the course of this year, and it does give me hope.
I was born by the river in a little tent. Oh, and just like the river, I've been running ever since. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will.
On the phone, I've got Hill Harper, extraordinary actor and now author and classmate of Barack Obama.
Yes, yes. We went to Harvard Law School together. And listen, y'all, first, you know, I know I don't look as old as Brock because I'm not as old. He took 5 years off in between college and law school, and I went straight. So I just wanted to put that out there.
Tell the listeners about this man that you know.
Wow. You know, there's so many stories I could tell you. I'll try to make them as quick as possible. When we were at Harvard together, you know, he graduated as the number one student coming out of Harvard Law School. Now, I didn't just say the number one black student. I didn't say the number one male student. I said the number one. So he was president of Harvard Law Review. And when you graduate as even the lowest student out of Harvard Law School, you get these high six-figure salary job offers. And he was offered a clerk for the Supreme Court. He had all these big job offers. He turned them all down, and he moved back to Chicago. And he started registering people to vote and helping folks out that were being laid off from steel plants in the south side of Chicago. And so it's just amazing. I believe if you look at the type of person someone is and the type of decisions they make in the past, you know what they are about the future. He's about service in the community.
Special guest in the studio with me right now. It is a pleasure to have in the studio Sanaa Lathan. How you doing?
I'm good. Thank you. How are you? I'm happy to be here.
You're here because you're here to support Barack. Tell us about that.
I'm here to support Barack because I basically, Alfre Woodard is obviously a very good friend of mine. We've worked together several times, and she's been campaigning for Barack, and she basically called me not too long ago and said, you know, the campaign is in dire need of getting people registered. Basically, there are 8 million black people around the country that are not registered. You know, this is going to change our future, you know, and it's so important to get people to register. So I'm just here to get the word out, call your friends. If you're not registered, register yourself.
Now, and I have to ask you this because what has this experience been for you?
For me, it's interesting because I think a lot of people are apathetic. I think a lot of people feel like the government, they don't have any real connection to the government. And I think that is obviously reflected in the fact that there's all these people that are not registered. And for all my adult life, I didn't feel any connection. And it wasn't until this election when I started to listen to Barack and listen to his message. And, you know, he reminded me of the fact that, you know, government in a democracy is supposed to be for the people, by the people.
Right.
This is our country. It kind of has been taken away from us in the last 8 years.
So I am going to go to the line, and I'm going to go to area code 614. Area code 614, you're on the line. Do you have a comment or a question?
Kathy, yes. This is Howard. Okay. How are you doing?
Hello, Sandy. How are you doing, my dear?
You know what? I was on my way home today, and I was just a-cheesing and smiling. I'm tired as the dickens. because I couldn't sleep. I couldn't sleep the night before. Got up at 4 o'clock in the morning to go vote and, you know, just stayed up. I didn't take a nap. You know, I'm just tired, but I am so excited, and I'm proud of America for looking beyond certain lives and beyond ourselves and rallying around one candidate and doing what a lot of people said that they would do. There was right. no Bradley effect. That's what really got to me. And I am proud to say that I am from Ohio today, because I thought I was just going to have to hide. I thought I was going to have to hide my face.
Oh, my
so,
goodness.
I mean,
yeah, when they announced that, when they announced that, I think that's when I started screaming.
Right. Right.
Well, I felt the same way, but it was so funny for me because Indiana was also a swing state, but we didn't come in until real late, and so when I actually woke up this morning and saw that Barack had won the state, it gave me that same sense of accomplishment. It was like we worked very hard to make sure that we were part of this process. And let me ask, because I want to ask you this:
yes.
Did it hit you stronger today than it did last night?
Honestly, it hasn't hit me yet, and I thought about that today. I'd have momentary bursts of, oh, my God, and then, you know, I just calm down because I'm at work and I have to be professional. And, you know, driving home again, I was beaming and cheesing, you know, in traffic, didn't care. It's just like it hasn't hit me yet. It has not. And because I know that there's work that we still need to do, and just in that clip, that you all just played. I mean, people need to realize this is the government, and the government is for the people, by the people. It is not time for us to sit back and say, oh, yay, we did it, and then go and put our heads back in the sand. It is time that we continually stay engaged in what is happening in the process and make ourselves a part of the process. And that's what I think that he offered America to realize again where we all sit in the process. So that I believe that is the number one reason why people voted for him, because he reminded us what America really is supposed to be about.
When I heard the speech that he made last night and the way he talked about his wife and the tenderness and the loving way he described the importance of his family, it just, oh my God, it moved me to tears. I don't know about everybody else, but it moved me to tears. And his partner, his best friend, his rock, oh my gosh. I've got a little audio clip here that I'm going to share with you guys, because I think Tony did have a little bit of a discussion with him about his family and how important his family is to him, because for me that says it all, because family is everything. So I'm going to play a little bit of this clip for you guys.
Now, Barack, I know the women in your life, your story has been a poignant story about being, you know, coming from a single-parent household, your mother and your grandmother raising you. How important has the women in your life, as your wife and your daughters, how important have they been to this process?
Well, you know, they're obviously, my wife and daughters are everything to me. When they travel with me, it is a great thing. It keeps me happy and energized. Every time I see those little girls, I'm reminded of why I'm doing this. You know, I want to make sure that they're living in a country that is fair and is just, where every child has a chance to prosper and you know, achieve their dreams. And right now, too many kids don't see bright possibilities ahead. They're in difficult circumstances. Their parents are in difficult circumstances. And you know, a lot of those folks are working hard, but they're just not given a chance. And I want to make sure that we have a country where, you know, if you want to go to college, we're giving you a $4,000 tuition credit, every student every year, so that you can afford it in exchange for some community service. If you are working hard, then you should be able to get paid a living wage, and I want to give you a tax break so that you can afford rising gas prices or rising food prices. If you don't have health care, we're a wealthy enough nation that everybody should have health care. That's the kind of America I believe in and that we've got to fight for.
Okay, I'm going to go to area code 219. Area code 219, you're on the line. Do you have a comment or a question?
Good evening, Kathy and Tony.
Hello.
This is Alan Roger Curry. Tony, I echo all the sentiments he just expressed about being a black man. And, Tony, hey, I'm here to tell you, man, you know, I have my macho moments, but I ain't scared to cry. I was
absolutely
tearing up. When they walked out on that stage as a black family,
oh my God.
I lost it. I just lost it.
One thing that I have noticed is that whenever, and this is me too, seeing him in that position gave me a sense of whatever the barrier is, I'm not going to let that barrier be an excuse for me anymore. And I'm going to do something, because that's one of the things that have happened we're so used to and we've been so damaged by, and we've had so many things thrown at us that we had a tendency over and over again to say, you know, why do I keep trying? Because it's just going to keep happening. And so I think at this particular stage, I think a lot of folks and a lot of men are going to take a look at this and go, you know what? If this man can come from where he came from, and he could be the president of the United States of America, the little stuff or the big stuff that I'm dealing with, I can deal with it, because I'm not going to let them hold me down, keep me down, or make me feel like I am down. So I don't think they're removed, but I think that we feel stronger and we can fight through a lot of the things that have been put in front of us to try to keep us down.
678, area code 678, do you have a comment, or are you just listening?
Good evening, Kathy. How are you? How's it going, Tony?
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing all right. I can't complain.
Same you.
This is one of those things in history, and if you think back in our recent history, nobody knows exactly where they were at 9/11,
mm-hmm.
when that happened, you know, what they were doing and where they were and things of that nature. This is one of those things of, you know, where were you on November 4th, 2008 at 11 o'clock in the evening, Eastern Standard Time, when they announced Barack Obama as the president-elect of the United States.
Right.
I know one of the very first things I did was I actually called my son, and 6 years old, and I told him, son, you can be president. I mean, I think that, and Tony, you kind of said something about it earlier, I think that it's not necessarily that the barriers have lifted. I think now that the excuses can now be lifted.
Right.
There shouldn't be any excuse as of right now as to why you can't make it. I've always known that I can make it regardless of race or anything like that. But, you know, you always hear the old saying of, oh, the man is keeping me down, the man is doing this,
yes,
and the man is doing that. And basically what the election said yesterday was not necessarily that the man of color, that a man of color is now president of the United States. What it's saying is that all the bigots and the racists of the world are the minority.
But in the unlikely story that is America, there has never been anything false about hope. We've been told we're not ready, or that we shouldn't try, or that we can't. Generations of Americans have responded with a simple creed that sums up the spirit of a people. Yes, we can. Yes, we can. Yes, we can.
Yes, we can. Oh, I am so hyped right now. I am so hyped. Tony, I am going to go to area code 860. You're on the line. Do you have a comment?
Hey, it's Kathy. How are you? This is Wendy Kay.
Hello, Wendy.
I just want to say I've been crying all day. I have I've been crying all day. This is remarkable. And, you know, I get teared up because so many of our ancestors have gone through so much. We waited over 221 years for our day. And although we can't really claim it as a full day for us, it's a half a day. And, you know, I think back to my great-great-grandfather is well-known in history. And I wonder how he felt, because he did something that changed the pace of America. And I could imagine how Obama is feeling right now.
If there is anyone out there who still doubts that America is a place where all things are possible, who still wonders if the dream of our founders is alive in our time, tonight is your answer.
Now I see how you were there for me.
It's the answer told by lines that stretched around schools and churches in numbers this nation has never seen, by people who waited 3 hours. Many for the first time in their lives, because they believed that this time must be different, that their voices could be that difference. It's the answer spoken by young and old, rich and poor, Democrat and Republican, black, white, Hispanic, Asian, Native American, gay, straight, disabled, and not disabled. Americans who sent a message to the world that we have never been just a collection of individuals or a collection of red states and blue states. We are and always will be the United States of America. It's the answer that led those who've been told for so long by so many to be cynical and fearful and doubtful about what we can achieve, to put their hands on the arc of history and bend it once more toward the hope of a better day. It's been a long time coming, but tonight, because of what we did on this day, in this election, at this defining moment, change has come to America. For even as we celebrate tonight, we know the challenges that tomorrow will bring are the greatest of our lifetime. Two wars, a planet in peril, the worst financial crisis in a century. The road ahead will be long. Our climb will be steep. We may not get there in 1 year or even in one term, but America, I have never been more hopeful than I am tonight that we will get there. I promise you, we as a people will get there. This election had many firsts and many stories that will be told for generations. Ann Nixon Cooper is 106 years old. She was born just a generation past slavery. She's seen throughout her century in America the heartache and the hope, the struggle and the progress, and the people who pressed on with that American creed. Yes, we can. The hoses in Birmingham, a bridge in Selma, and a preacher from Atlanta who told the people that we shall overcome. Yes, we can. We have seen so much, but there's so much more to do. If my daughters should be so lucky to live as long as Ann Nixon Cooper, what change will they see? This is our moment to restore prosperity and promote the cause of peace. And where we are met with cynicism and doubt and those who tell us that we can't, we will respond with that timeless creed that sums up the spirit of a people. Yes, we can. Thank you. God bless you. And may God bless the United States of America.